Welcome to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Luann Crane here with our host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. And Dr. Dobson, there is no question about it. Here at Family Talk, we simply love our military.
Well, there is no doubt about that. And our listeners love the military, too.
Mm-hmm.
Every time we air a program that reaches out to those who give so much of themselves and their families to support and defend what we care about most, our own families and our own country, we hear from people like that in droves.
Yeah.
And today we have a discussion plan that is of utmost importance to those who serve in the armed forces and all the rest of us combined, as well as to anyone who is concerned about the security of this country. And seeing as tomorrow is D-Day, Luann, a day on which we honor the ultimate sacrifice made by so many on the beaches of Normandy during World War II, this is a very fitting time for us to give our listeners an update on how our military is faring in the midst of a culture war that has us all in upheaval.
Mm-hmm.
Most of our listeners are probably aware of the repeal of the 1993 policy, commonly known as Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and that has had ramifications mm-hmm. throughout the military, and we're just seeing the start of that. What they may not have heard in the mainstream media is the impact of other policies that are changing the military for the worst. And it's, I think, going to weaken our defense of this great country. So we're here to talk about some things that are far from trivial.
Well, and as you just said, Doctor, the media is not doing a good job of keeping us informed on so many of these issues. So listeners are going to hear a lot of new information today.
Well, we just cannot depend on the big news networks for the truth on the issues that affect us, Luann. And
mm-hmm.
for that reason, I've invited my friend Elaine Donnelly to join us today. She is an authority on these issues that we were just describing, and I have depended on her for years to keep us informed on military matters. And I'm afraid that much of what she will tell us about today is not good.
Yeah,
it's very disturbing because the people who are pulling the strings on the military come from a far-left position. I'm referring to this administration and others that have been appointed in that administration. Elaine Donnelly is the founder and president of the Center for Military Readiness, which advocates high single standards in training, we'll explain that, and sound policies in military and social affairs. She was appointed to the President's Commission on the Assignment of Women in the Armed Forces by President George Herbert Walker Bush. That was in 1992. She also served as a member of the Defense Advisory Committee on Women in the Services from 1984 to 1986.
Mm-hmm.
Elaine's on the phone with us right now, I believe.
Yes, she is.
Is that right?
She's waiting.
Elaine, welcome to Family Talk.
Thank you so much. You know, it's good that you're mentioning the D-Day observances, because on that day, something happened that Ronald Reagan saluted in 1984. That's when I was just a member of the Dakowitz Committee, a civilian woman at that time. I had a lot to learn about the military. And what he spoke about that day is still very important, because he saluted the veterans that were there. And he said, "You risked everything here. Why did you do it? What held you together to take on this challenge?" There were steep cliffs there at Point de Hoc, and about 225 Rangers landed. Only 90 survived to bear arms after that day. And what held them together, the force that held those troops together, was something called unit cohesion or team cohesion. And over the years, I've learned a lot about this, and I'm seeing that the current political forces in our military are chipping away and eroding team cohesion. there are a set of core values in the military that are very important that distinguish this institution from the civilian world. Mm. It is such a different institution. There are all sorts of rules that apply in the military that do not apply in the civilian world. And there's only one reason. It's called trust. Mm. Trust is what caused the success of D-Day when Point du Hoc was assaulted by those Rangers. Mm. It is just as important today, even in modern warfare. And I'm afraid that when we forget that and we go off into side issues such as diversity in the military, we really are undermining the best military in the world.
Elaine, Shirley and I have been to Normandy 3 times now. The most recent was in October of 2010. Mm-hmm. And we stood on the platform that's being built, the observation place where Ronald Reagan spoke. And I'm telling you, we had tears in our eyes as we thought about those men that came crashing onto the shores of Normandy. They had to run 150 yards across the sand. There were many, many soldiers who died right in that spot. And then they had to eventually climb the bluffs there, like you just mentioned. I cannot imagine a woman doing that. I don't mean that in a disrespectful mm-hmm. way. I cannot imagine a woman being assigned to that kind of combat, and yet that's where our military chiefs of staff and our government are taking us.
I'm afraid so. The Rangers are a very unique and special community in the Army, special operations forces in all branches of the services. Marine infantry also. These are all male units currently. But recently, the announcement was made that in the Marine Corps, there will be female trainees at the Marine officer course, the infantry officer course, at Quantico, Virginia. And shortly thereafter, the Chief of Staff of the Army, General Raymond Odierno, also announced that they are going to consider putting female trainees through Ranger School. Now, that doesn't mean that they would become Rangers or part of the Ranger Regiment. Going through the training is considered a credential for advancement, career advancement. It's all about earning that tab because 90% of the high-level officers in the Army have a Ranger tab. That means they went through the course. Now, why are we turning the elite training of both Rangers and Marine Infantry into a credential just for career advancement of a few? This is the mindset of the current administration, that diversity is so important. It must take priority over everything else. Mm. And there's a pattern here. It started, actually, back in January when the Department of Defense announced that henceforth diversity would be a primary goal. The former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mike Mullen, said diversity is a strategic imperative. Diversity is the primary force for personnel policies these days in the military.
Elaine, I want to make sure that I didn't misstate something in my mm-hmm. introduction. Are we moving in the direction of women in combat?
Yes, we are. Defined mm-hmm. as the units that attack the enemy. Women soldiers are already in danger when they deploy in war. We honor and respect them so much because they take on that responsibility, that danger, willingly. They are volunteers. The women in the military are not to blame for any of the policies that we're concerned about here. We're talking about the Pentagon leaders and the president who sets policy for the Department of Defense. Everybody in the military has to follow orders. That's why it is such a unique institution. It's part of its strength. People must follow orders. We can't have it any other way.
Now, you cannot deny that there are physical differences between males and females, and the men are stronger. Mm-hmm. Are they going to have to, and are they already implementing gender neutralization in training standards in order to make it possible for women to accept those assignments?
Well, when you get to the direct ground combat battalions, infantry, special operations forces, Rangers, and the like, physical differences do matter. And the Marine Corps Commandant recently said, when he announced that they would do a test of women in infantry training, he said that the standards would be the same, identical for men and women. How can that be? Because if you go to officer candidate school, and I've been there, I have photographs of the course. On the one side, you have obstacles and barriers, things that are suspended that are quite high. The barriers for the men to go over are 12 inches higher than those for the women. And on the women's side of the course, there are little assists, like a little wooden plank that's nailed to the obstacle. It gives them a toehold so they can get over easier. That's what you call gender norming, and there's different ways to gender norm and have different requirements for men and women.
But combat is not gender normed.
That's right.
I think I recall that the men who stormed the beaches in Normandy carried 150 pounds apiece.
That's right.
And that's what the responsibility required. Many men drowned as a result of it.
That's right.
And yet women are going to carry less.
Well, that's right. That's why this whole exercise is just a lose-lose situation. It does break down that bond of trust, unfortunately, because the Marines are going to have to do one of several things. They will either have to accept huge numbers of injuries as the women, and they are brave. They will try to succeed. If they try and they cannot do the same thing as the men, bones will break, literally. Mm-hmm. Injuries will soar, as they did in a British test that ended in 1998. Injuries went up 200%, and so they ended the experiment in Britain, and they do not have women in those infantry battalions. Another thing they could do is just not do the tougher exercises, change the requirements, in other words, and lower the standards that men would otherwise go through. Or you can just take certain things out or give them scoring differently. So yeah. People with military background should certainly raise a question about this through the organizations that they belong to that are from those elite organizations.
Yeah.
This doesn't have to be this way, but it will be this way under this president. But the political situation could, and let's hope it does, change.
Elaine, I think I read a while back that in some training programs, men are required to be outfitted as though they were pregnant.
That was an interesting example of how, if you get into this diversity mindset, you'll do almost anything. In Japan, yes, there was a story in Stars and Stripes and a little video of a man who was wearing a padded belly and breasts to simulate pregnancy.
What in the world for?
Well, he was at a training school for drill instructors. And he and the others, the men were required to wear this, take turns for about an hour, in order to understand what it feels like to be a pregnant woman soldier going through training. Well, the first thought that came to my mind was, how many pregnant women do they expect to get through Army training? The answer is, because of diversity, the sky's the limit. I mean, the pressure to increase the numbers of women in or near combat training, it's just to increase these diversity metrics.
Yeah.
That's a new phrase, by the way, diversity metrics. It's the same as goals, quotas, whatever you call it. It means that female officers in particular will be put in places where otherwise men would serve. Mm-hmm. And the idea is to make the Army look good, not necessarily to make the Army do its mission well.
Luann, you have borne four children.
Yes, sir.
Three of them are grown and now are almost grown. Can you imagine being pregnant and being in some kind of training program like that?
No, and to just hear that story you just mentioned, Elaine, just kind of plays out the whole ridiculousness of this, I think. Doctor, I'm also thinking of those four kids. I have three boys and a girl, and several of them ran track. And for many of us parents, we're sitting here thinking, okay, I know that when they go out and they run those hurdles, the hurdles for the women are several inches shorter than the hurdles for the men. I mean, all of us who are parents know that there are these inbred differences. No one's out there clamoring to say raise the hurdle on the high school girls to meet the boys. Elaine, I also want to ask you, as we talk about all these diversity mandates and the push to see women in combat positions, Is this coming from the top down, or is this actually that we're hearing from women in the military saying, boy, we really need to be in combat and the standards need to be lowered to accommodate us? Where's the pressure coming from?
It's not coming from the overwhelming majority of women in the military in the enlisted ranks. Most enlisted women want nothing to do with being in or near the close combat infantry battalions, the tip of the spear, the ones who attack the enemy. They don't want that. Women are doing different kinds of things, especially working with civilian Iraqi and Afghan women. They do things with women and children there that the men cannot do. And again, that role deserves recognition. It is somewhat different. But it is still not the same as direct ground combat, which involves more than just being in danger and in harm's way. It means attacking the enemy. But, you know, the female athletes that you mentioned, this is an obvious point that anybody can understand. The National Football League does not pursue diversity in training female players for non-lethal combat on the gridiron. Even the best female athletes would not make it through football training. But in contrast, here we have the United States Marine Corps inviting women to train for infantry battalions that engage in lethal combat, in missions, violent conflicts in which lives and missions are at risk. This makes no sense.
Let me tell you what else makes no sense and really concerns me. And I know you know this, Elaine. It's in the nature of men to protect women in life-threatening situations, especially when they know that some of the women fighting alongside of them are mothers. You know, to expect men not to look out for the welfare of female soldiers changes something basic in the relationship between men and women. And it also makes combat forces less effective. You know, I don't know if I can say that any better, but there is something here to be considered.
There is, but you know, it is being eroded. In fact, Dr. Keith Ablow of Fox News just commented on this the other day. A coarsening in our culture has already occurred. Men care less about watching out for women. Popular culture films that portray women and men in different forms of simulated combat are quite common. Every movie you see has a woman in combat, it seems. The more this progresses, it really does degrade respect for women in the way that we have known it in the past. Again, we honor and respect the sacrifices of our women in the military. 128 have died in the current war since 9/11. That is an unprecedented number. And yes, the men have become somewhat, I won't say used to it, they understand and they see it and they just accommodate that. And it's not quite the same as it used to be. I mean, I've talked to soldiers who have seen women killed in some of the most gross ways, just like they've seen male buddies blown apart in war. This is not an issue of equal opportunity. It's not like any other job or career. It really is something if we as a nation say that, well, violence against women is wrong unless it happens at the hands of the enemy. And that's what the whole drive for diversity is all about. It's only to get some female officers into high ranks so that they can become brigadier and major generals and generals in charge of the Army itself. The first female chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff is a goal that comes up all the time. So my suggestion is that General Dempsey, who is the current chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, he should go to the president, say, Mr. President, I hereby resign, and I think you should give my position to this very fine female officer here. That way, we could achieve this diversity goal without turning Army Ranger training upside down.
Elaine, I'm curious as a woman. I have three sons, and I know we always prepare them for the possibility that someday, if a draft was reenacted, they could be drafted. What do all of these changes mean for my daughter?
The Supreme Court has upheld the exemption that young civilian women have enjoyed with regard to selective service registration for one very simple reason. You don't register anyone unless there's a potential of a draft, and you don't draft anyone unless they're going to be used in combat. If women are not in the direct ground combat units, there was no need to register them for selective service. But that eligibility, once it changes, will invite the ACLU to go back into court on behalf of men, and this time they will win. That means that civilian women have a lot to be worried about with regard to what happens to female soldiers and Marines in the military. The two issues are very closely tied. This is a decision that should not be made by a federal court. Only Congress should decide this, and personally, I don't think the American people would ever approve of including women in selective service and a possible future draft.
So for anybody who thinks this isn't going to touch me, it very much could in that regard.
It could. Mm-hmm. It could. It's a remote possibility, but it certainly is a legal consequence that, frankly, there is no doubt about it. That is something from one would come the other.
Elaine, you were my guest talking about this subject in the mid-90s.
Yes.
When you warned about the implications of women serving in combat roles. And those two broadcasts that we did brought the greatest amount of mail and phone calls in the history of our program. More than 50,000 people called, and all of the responses were negative. The American people knew this was wrong and knew that it should not be done and complained bitterly about it. That held it off a little bit.
It did, now I have, for a long time.
Now I have the impression that the American people have given up and said, well, diversity's a good thing.
Diversity, in my mind, is I've always thought it was a good thing. But when you see a diversity report saying this is not about treating everyone the same, and I'm quoting from the book, the manual that they put out, under the mandates we're talking about here, this gets away from policies that are color and gender blind. The new concept of inclusion is a radical departure from the military's honorable tradition of recognizing individual merit. In fact, the armed forces were way ahead of the civilian world in recognizing individual merit, regardless of race, regardless of gender even. But the way we're going now, the civil rights movement is being co-opted by the advocates of diversity, by the advocates of the LGBT equality group. There are a lot of influences under the current president who, unfortunately, are in the driver's seat in the Pentagon, and they are making some serious problems here. Can it change? Yes. The military is resilient. But right now, people have got to become aware, first of all, of what's happening, and secondly, figure out a way to do something about it. I think every major conservative cause there is has taken a beating in the last several years, whether it's health care, whether it's the economy, our banking system, all kinds of things have been seriously harmed in the last 3 years. So are we going to give up on all of that? No, I certainly hope not, not as Americans. But the military is different because it's the only military we have. If you cause problems in education, you can always homeschool. You can go to a different school system. If you don't like your state, you can move to another state. But if something is wrong with the military, the culture of the military, Reagan had an easy job of it. All he had to do was rebuild the ships and the planes and the hardware. But rebuilding the culture of the military, after we go through this process of diversifying and imposing LGBT agendas and lowering standards to accommodate it all, this is going to be more difficult.
Elaine,
but the political situation is going to change, we hope.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but our time is gone. We're going to do another program if you'd be willing to talk with us again. We've only discussed, Luann, one of these issues having to do with women in combat, but there are many others having to do with don't ask, don't tell, and a lot of other things that are changing the culture of the military in a way that I think threatens the security of this country and the well-being of the military personnel themselves. Elaine, thank you. It's always good to talk to you. We will place another call, and we will go right on with this conversation.
Thank you so much.
But, Doctor, because we've moved so quickly today, I do want to let listeners know that much of the information that they've heard is summarized on the Center for Military Readiness website, which, of course, we will link to from drjamesdobson.org. If you are in the armed forces and maybe these policies and changes are affecting you and your ability to serve our country, and you need to talk to somebody about it, Elaine actually has a way for you to share those items confidentially. So again, to connect with even those resources, you can start at drjamesdobson.org. In closing, if you would like to help Family Talk keep you up to date on these all-important cultural issues that obviously affect your family, you can also donate at that same website, drjamesdobson.org, or when you call us, our phone number is 877-732-6825. And don't forget, we're only weeks away from Dr. Dobson's Building a Family Legacy event. That's at Skyline Church in San Diego, California. Tell your neighbors, tell your friends about this historic live taping of Dr. Dobson's classic advice with some wonderful new insights for all of us who want to strengthen our families. Learn all about how you can attend this free event at drjamesdobson.org, or that phone number one last time, 877-732-6825. Thanks for spending this part of your day with us. And of course, we'll see you right back here tomorrow for more with our guest, Elaine Donnelly, right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.